Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Monday, 30th of November, 2020. And while we had a fairly positive close to last week, and we're into this traditionally very strong season, at least that's the supposed seasonality here, we're off to a bit of a weak start here to start the day, to start the week, and especially in Asia. And I think we've got a pretty compelling reason why after searching around a bit. Peter, take us through the first slide here where we're talking about the bit of a pump and dump in Monday's session to start the week in China.
Yeah, so it was actually quite an interesting session because we had a very crazy start to the session, actually, as you can see here on slide two. So the Ant IPO, the news out saying that they could actually had a slim chance of getting done next year. Interestingly enough, that was interpreted as being positive. I actually thought that this news bit is worse than expected because I mean, why can't they get the regulatory framework done faster than that? I mean, so to me, it was negative, but the market interpreted it as positive in China. The market was up 2%, as you can see. And then, I mean, literally half an hour later than when this news hit the wire, we got a new piece of it coming out with the Trump administration most likely going to add China's SMIC and CNOOC. And SMIC, for those that don't know, it's the biggest national semiconductor company in China, and CNOOC is a big oil and gas company. And CNOOC shares are down as we speak, 14%. It relies very heavily on U.S. Oil and gas service equipment and software. So both hardware and software, they need that for their operations. And again, I think it's a testimony to the fact that although China wants to be totally independent and reliant on their own technology, there are actually a lot of areas in the economy where they are lacking and are actually quite some years behind, oil and gas being one of them on the technology side, but also on the semiconductor side. You sent a piece to me a couple of weeks ago, John, on the semiconductors, and actually this whole clamped down by the Trump administration in the global supply chain of semiconductors have potentially put, according to some experts, China behind somewhere between 5 and 10 years. It isn't to say that they couldn't ramp up and get back into the game quicker, but the 5 to 10 years is sort of the estimated number of years they're behind. It's a super advanced technology, and there are basically only three countries in the world that can do semiconductors, and Israel, Taiwan, and South Korea. But the ban from the U.S. is really shutting China out of this lucrative, high quality semiconductors.
And if I recall, I'm not sure if it was that same article, but there's also this issue with Intel, for example, having a hard time ramping up its chip production because it's suddenly finding itself hard, having a hard time competing with Taiwan. So maybe we're down to one that's at the very top of its game, and that's Taiwan. And I guess the bigger key overriding question is how China takes this news, how China absorbs this news, and what it's going to do about it, and just the overarching title over all this is this risk we've talked about so many times before, and that of course the market is very interested to know as well, is are we at risk of the world economy bifurcating into two areas of interest here?
And
then adding to that, yeah, just a second, Ola, but just I wanted to say, just to segue into the next slide and adding to that impetus and adding to that story overnight is this FT article where FT got a look at an 11-page document, a proposal drafted up, a draft proposal of the EU looking clearly with the move away from the unilateral Trump administration into a Biden administration, hoping that the time is ripe for a move and some kind of explicit alliance on things, the challenge, quote unquote, that China poses among other international issues. So a huge question out there. I'm sorry I cut you off there, Ola. I just wanted to, because I had that segue ready to go, and your thoughts.
Yeah, and I got another segue, John, because obviously the semiconductor is obviously a high technological area which requires a lot of catching up. But one area where we could see a potentially more immediate impact is the rare earth minerals, because we mentioned we had a few slides about that section last week following another company joining the New York Stock Exchange, the MP Materials Corp. And then China's basically going to introduce an export control law, probably again in response to the laws have been put in place by US right now. And the speculation is basically that rare earths could be added to the list. If that is the case, that obviously that could could upset the market quite significantly. So we've seen the whole sector up 40% so far this month. The MP materials that we mentioned last week is now up nearly 100%. It's nearly doubled since it was launched on the New York Stock Exchange. So I think it's a sector we need to keep an eye on as well in this respect.
Yeah, very good to point out, because there are key individual equities that can be huge winners, because when you're forced to reallocate in this bifurcation process, suddenly you're finding yourself not able to produce something. There's a huge capital rush into anybody that could, credibly absorb those inflows and create some production out the other ends to address that shortcoming in production. And briefly, I'll mention in the FX space, I mean, paint is very busily drying for the most part, but we are edging ever so slowly closer to the key areas. Eurodollar 120 is the big one. And longer term, I kind of question how the overnight action fits with this narrative at all in any way, shape, or form. I think maybe some of the downside action today could be on the end of the month. This is the strongest month for global equities ever, assuming we're closing approximately at current levels. And the dollar and other FX bits and pieces could be a part of some adjustments. But 120, massive level. In terms of why it wouldn't fit with the narrative, you would want to see for a higher euro dollar, I think you arguably want to be looking, A, post-COVID in a more positive environment. Europe is highly dependent on exports, and especially in growth terms to Asia. If that is under a cloud, that's not particularly euro positive either. So, the price action is what it is, and we'll track this as we approach. And if we can break 120 here, I think I would like a more positive general outlook for a break lower in the dollar here. But other pairs also looking interesting. Aussie is edging towards that 74 top, 74 plus top that was the top for the cycle post COVID-19 panic as well. But gold is not really getting its signals from the dollar these days. I'm not sure where it's getting its signals from. And I think you were scratching your head a little bit on our internal call and the sort of the continued weakness here.
Indeed, John, but we're definitely seeing a complete divergence here. And since the vaccine news was announced back in early November, gold has slumped, copper has continued to surge higher. China's currently is showing an incredible appetite for industrial metals, so that's obviously helping drive copper even further up. But you're absolutely right, gold has slumped below 1800 on Friday. It was obviously a Thanksgiving holiday, so liquidity potentially not as strong as it normally is. So it was a good opportunity if you were looking for stops to the downside, and they were found. I think it was something like 6 million ounces of trade within that hour when it broke. And it is happening at a time where real yields are coming down once again, approaching a negative 1%. And we are seeing this dollar moving weak as well. So it is other things. And it is that complete focus on vaccine and how it's going to save the world next year. And the world is going to be completely different from in a year from now. And obviously, that's where the narrative may become a little bit too positive in terms of where we see some of the underlying developments, some such inflation, which we highlighted last week, which is starting to pick up in various places, the dollar potentially weakening further, and then obviously the amount of debt that still requires very low interest rates to service. So I think this is it's still a market that needs a trigger. So far, we haven't got it. So the key focus now in the short term is that 1763 level. That's the 50% retracement of the whole sell or the whole rally from March to August. So we are almost touched overnight, and we're bouncing from that level right now. But we're quite a few dollars away from safety at this stage.
Yeah, and then oil briefly was has been consolidating again here. I suppose that's as much on the near-term demand uncertainty, but is there also a supply angle here?
Yeah, exactly. The market has been rallying on the two things. Obviously, looking into 2021, looking for a pickup in fuel demand as the vaccine starts to be distributed. That has led to a very, very strong surge this month, especially in the oil companies. But oil has also rallied by almost 20%. But some nervousness has started to creep into the market now over the weekend, and it is the OPEC and OPEC Plus meetings today and tomorrow that is raising some concerns, because the market had been pricing in an extension of the current production cuts, but it seems like they are struggling to come to an agreement. Iraq and UAE are two of the opponents against the postponement. They want to see they want to stick to the deal, which basically means that 1.9 million barrels could hit the market additionally in January, and that is just simply too soon, considering that we are still in lockdowns and we are still not seeing the actual pickup in demand, which is only tabled in for later in 2021. So the market will be on tenterhooks. They will be looking for the chimney and see what kind of smoke that comes out of the chimney over the next 2 days.
All right, white or otherwise.
Exactly.
Okay, Peter, I'm surprised, you know, here we are at the end of November, not exactly a quarter end type of time frame, but we're looking at some pretty interesting companies reporting this week. And I'm seeing on your slide, on slide 8, a couple of these interesting big tech names, especially the newcomer variety.
Yeah, so we are off season, basically, or at least we are off the main part of the season, but there, as you rightly pointed out, we still have some interesting ones. I've highlighted that in red. You can see that on slide 8. So this Monday, the most important one is I don't know how you pronounce it.
May Twin.
Okay, thank you, John. you are a language expert here. May Twin. Which
I don't know the tones, but it's May Twin is the approximately the pronunciation.
Okay, thanks. It's basically within the e-commerce space and delivery services. It's a fast-growing company. The market value, I think, it's above $200 billion. So this is a major one. It's in the top five of the whole global e-commerce space. Definitely something to watch. I just checked before we went on the podcast. They haven't reported yet, so it's probably for an after market earnings release there in China. And then tomorrow we have Salesforce being, we talked about that last week, potentially becoming this sixth quantity monopoly U.S. technology company, joining the gang of five in terms of, you know, wielding market power over technology and software. That company's reporting on Tuesday has been almost had uninterrupted growth, around 25% per year, stable for 20 years. I don't know of a company, at least, that have had such a stable and predictable high growth rate for two decades. And then we have a bunch of Canadian banks reporting also tomorrow and the day after that on Wednesday. Typically not a big splash for the market. But then we have that Snowflake, that very red hot IPO a little bit more than a month ago. It's been up and down since the IPO. Lately has been trading higher. From the IPO price, it's significantly higher, but only really astute institutional clients were able to get into that at that IPO. But that will be the first quarterly earnings release for Snowflake, and it's an interesting company because it sits sort of outside the three major players in the cloud and data analytics industry, which is Amazon, Microsoft, and Google. And Snowflake seems to be having an offering here that is that's really gaining a lot of attraction. And then on Thursday, one of the other, you could call them a bubble stock if you're David Einhorn, or you could just call it the high growth company. There are many labels you could put on this company, but it's definitely one for the digital age, the DocuSign, basically delivering software that enables people digitally to sign a lot of documents, which I think have been pretty important in this COVID-19 pandemic. I still wonder whether they can justify the valuation. So I think this one is particularly, so from a market reaction point of view, I think DocuSign is actually the most interesting one, and that's on Thursday.
Okay, interesting. I just pulled up a chart there, so it's basically tripled plus off the lows, but then it's been kind of, like you said, it's been gyrating flat for several months now after a crazy peak rolling off in early September. That'd be interesting. Yeah, like you're right. That must have been the previous earnings release, given that it was 3 months ago, so it looks like it could be very sensitive to their outlook on earnings. That one. All right, let's go to the calendar for today and for the rest of the week, or the last day of the month. So tomorrow is the big, first of the month, the ISM and other manufacturing PMIs from around the world. We'll stay tuned for that. I guess the highlight of the week, we have the Australian RBA out with an announcement overnight. They sort of waxed more positive recently, so I'm not expecting any major surprises there. We have Fed Chair Powell for the Senate and House committees this week on Tuesday and Wednesday, respectively. No doubt saying the same boring line of late, and then pleading for, please give us more fiscal, give us more fiscal. And we have a lame duck Congress session, which is making that progress very awful. And I'm wondering when the market is going to get a bit more on point with tracking that issue, but we'll follow up with that in future podcasts. And then at the tail end of the week, we have, of course, the last cycle of November employment data from the U.S., change in non-farm payrolls, etc. So we'll be looking for that. And it looks like all the election stuff is going to go smoothly. Everything's getting certified in various states here and there. Trump basically saying he will leave office even if he won't verbally concede the election. A pretty funny Trump-style comment there. Yeah, and then it's paving the way for that December FOMC meeting, which I think for FX is one of the bigger event risks for the remainder of the year. Haven't mentioned much on Brexit. We're seeing the pound a bit weaker here. This is supposedly the last week of negotiations. They keep touting every week as the last week for negotiations. They're citing some progress on the fisheries issue. I wonder if we don't end up with some sort of fudge where they declare a deal, but it really is just a transition to another sort of last details negotiating round. Doesn't seem to be a lot of reactivity, but I would watch euro sterling around the 0.90 level. I think that's rather pivotal, and we've gotten quite close to that after we were much, much lower in recent couple of weeks. So watch out for that. For today, we'll call it a day, and we will be back tomorrow, as we always are, with the Saxo Market Call. For today, thanks for joining.